Hello, I am Paige Albiniak, editorial director at Promax, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. And today I am talking to the amazing and wonderful Kayla Marie Hardaway. She is digital editor at Promax and for Daily Brief. Hello, Kayla Marie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the podcast. It's Kayla Marie's podcast debut. So whoosh, cheers. Yay. All right. So we're a little late on this just because I was at NAPI and Kayla was at TCA, but now we're going to have a conversation about everything that happened in the 2.5 weeks of TCA, much of which Kayla Marie covered. So why don't you tell us, I feel like probably most people know what it is, but just in case, tell us what TCA does and why it's something that you like to cover.
Right. So TCA, the Television Critics Association, you know, they host their biannual press tour, one in the summer and then one in the winter. So over the course of 2 weeks, as you mentioned, pretty much both digital and linear networks showcase their programming. Whether it's new returning series, they have their cast and creators on stage addressing questions that are asked directly from reporters in the room. So it's pretty much just a really great opportunity to not only understand the backbone of a lot of the series that are coming out, especially as there's more and more content coming out every single year, but it really allows people to connect with the show as we're seeing all this promotional material coming out and hearing more and more about more shows that are coming out.
I think this is the second time you've gone. What do you like about your very enthusiastic cover of TCA, which I appreciate because I'm cynical and I'm like, ugh, TCA. So tell me what you like about covering it. What do you feel like you gain from it?
Yeah, for me, I think it's really easy to just judge a book by its cover. You know, we see marketing materials for all these series coming out. We see the trailers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're effective, sometimes they're not. And TCA just really allows the opportunity, as I mentioned, just to really understand why these shows are coming out. I feel like you get a fresh perspective of, you know, the inception of a series, why people think it's important and why they're passionate about it mostly. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I really appreciate is the passion factor and seeing that, you know, sometimes things aren't communicated as well in the campaign process of things. And there mm-hmm. really could be something really cool out there. And I think that shows too when, you know, there's these series that come out and surprise us and, you know, go on for so many seasons or, you know, people don't think that it would have go anywhere. But it's because it just wasn't communicated well in the end when in fact there is this really great strong backbone that you get to learn about at TCA. So I feel like it's really awesome just getting that perspective directly from the people involved in it and seeing what everything's really about.
I agree with all that. I also, when I'm not being cynical, I like hearing from the executives because I feel like you get a sense of what their overall strategy is and outlook is for each of these networks. Mm-hmm. And now that the streaming services are coming, not all of them, as we will discuss, but some of them, you get a sense for what their strategy is and where they feel like they lie in the overall TV landscape. So I think that's all useful.
Yeah, definitely. I think that was the two that I've been to, the first one actually didn't have as strong of a central theme, but this year I would definitely say that there was one that everyone was addressing and really allowed perspective from that way and kind of what they felt about it as opposed to kind of what the media is saying about it or how it's shaping it.
What would you say the central theme that came out was?
To no one's surprise, I'm sure, was streaming and mm-hmm. kind of where networks, both digital and linear, kind of stand in the streaming wars or the so-called streaming wars, I would say. Mm-hmm. Many of the executives, whether it was their executive sessions or just the opening for each network's day, pretty outrightly took a stance on where they are in the streaming wars, what their strategy is, and what it will be moving forward.
This is a little bit jumping ahead, but I feel like I've heard people say recently, we're not competing against each other, we're competing for people's time. What do you think about that statement and do you buy it?
I buy it for certain networks for a few reasons. So, the first one that jumps out to me that was a part of TCA was Hulu. Hulu had a lot of different parts in TCA. You know, it came up in a couple different conversations, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But when it came time for their day and for their executive session to come out, for them, they were really drawing on the fact that they're not focused on, as you mentioned, like other people, but more mm-hmm. so making high quality original content. And for some reason, that one stood out to me as not feeling as authentic as others, because in the end, their stance was that they're not focused on library content. They're not focused on big acquisitions. You know, they're not focused on these big titles, you know, The Friends, The Seinfeld, The South Park, all of these series that we've been hearing about.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they're focused on creating high quality original series. Now, while that is true, they do have a lot of content coming out within this next year, which they went through during TCA. I think that that was more of a statement in them saying that just because they don't really have that one big library series that's going to draw people directly to Hulu, because everything's being moved around. Right now they have South Park. It's going to HBO Max.
They have Seinfeld. Yeah.
And they have Seinfeld, which is going to Netflix, right?
Yes, I think that is correct. Yes. Netflix did a huge deal for them. Yeah.
They have Seinfeld, which is going over to Netflix. So they are losing a big part of what makes, I think, streaming services important, especially as they are, you know, somewhat competing against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that was their way of framing that they still have something to offer is by these original series that are coming out.
Yeah, I mean, I see what they're saying in that if each one of them sort of has a different take, like Disney Plus is very specifically for younger, not young kids, but kids and families, and Hulu is sort of serving a different part of the marketplace. And I also think in light of their change of ownership and the shifting libraries, they're having to figure out exactly what they're doing. But but on the flip side, I do feel like it's a little inauthentic to say they're not competing against each other, just because that's the nature of the business. These people are fierce competitors. And so, yeah, they're competing for viewers' time as they always were. But would you rather have, you know, let me think of a series, The Masked Singer or The Voice, something huge that's going to grab a lot of audience? Yes, of course, you always want that. Even if you're Apple TV Plus and you're pretending like, oh, we're just doing a few originals to launch the service so people buy our devices, you still want a hit. You still want The Morning Show to get Golden Globe nominations and get people talking, no matter who you are.
Exactly. And I think what's important too is that every single streamer, every single network that was a part of it, as I mentioned, took a stance or kind of had their angle as to what makes them different. And in a sense, that is showing that they are competing with each other, because they had to think about what their stance is from the get-go. For example, Starz came out and said that they have no intentions of entering the streaming space on their own. They're solely going to be an add-on. They're going to supplement other services. Whereas Amazon Prime Video, super smart, because, you know, I think it's more of like a brand thing.
Yeah, they'll like never no have enough gonna, content. Yeah.
They'll never, exactly. And like they have their big series like Power, which is ending. And sure, they have other series that are gaining that traction and have that traction already. But essentially, they'll never have a whole library of, I'm a Starz fan, I'm going to watch every single Starz show.
Right, right. They won't be like HBO Max, which just has library for days.
Exactly. And then there are other streamers like Amazon Prime Video. Their stance is that they're not in the nature of just being streaming, just being video, just being content. They have a whole business that surrounds that. And so they're focused on getting people to subscribe to them for all of the other parts of their business. And video is just one part of that that's growing, but it's not their central piece, which is why they don't consider themselves competing. I mean, there are several examples, and like I said, everyone kind of took a stance on it, but I definitely think that, are they competing against each other? Yes, definitely, whether they want to admit it or not. And I think that the trend now is, especially as the streaming wars continues to go, is just picking a stance on it, having an angle and marketing it that way so that they aren't being pit against each other.
Well, that piece of it too, I think, is very interesting that, you know, and that's part of what you get at TCA, is you get to be in front of all these executives and have them present essentially what is the marketing presentation, what's the angle we're taking. And that's, especially for us covering marketing, that's incredibly useful.
Right. And it's definitely useful in seeing these pieces come out and just getting a better understanding of the brand overall and kind of what their motives were in releasing, like you said, the marketing campaigns, the different series, the programming lineups, and kind of how that plays into everything overall.
Yeah, totally. All right. So you kind of said this a little bit, but of the presentations you covered, which were many, which sort of resonated with you the most?
What probably resonated with me the most was one of them being HBO, for a couple reasons, both good and not great. HBO, is no stranger to releasing a lot of content, a lot of new series. They're, this year alone, they've received so much recognition, so many awards for all the series that are coming out. I think this TCA was especially important given the end of Game of Thrones, the big series like Big Little Lies. There was a lot hanging in the balance of kind of what the next chapter will be, I guess, after having such big names like that and having shows that were so impactful in society overall and really stirring conversation. So they just had a lot of shows in general that really stood out to me, one of them being The Undoing, which is coming from Big Little Lies creator David E. Kelley. Nicole Kidman stars in it and also Hugh Grant. So that one's, of course, stirred a lot of interest just because the Big Little Lies factor of it, and that it is like a similar theme to that show, and Nicole Kidman's playing a similar character. I would also say that, in addition to series like that that are being launched, what made HBO stand out so much was actually the HBO Max factor of it all. So yeah, that was fairly interesting. So basically, HBO Max didn't or HBO didn't have its own executive session. They didn't lead off the day with any grand statement of where HBO as a sole brand is and where it stands among everyone else. Instead, they saved their executive session for the end, which featured execs that are representing HBO Max. They started off by saying that although they released a lot of, information, they had their investor day. They present a lot of information then. They wanted to address questions, and it very much seemed like we were going to get a lot of answers to a lot of the questions that have been arising over the last couple of months. But instead, it kind of just caused a lot more confusion about what HBO Max is and where it stands and kind of w the why it exists, why it's important to people. That was just interesting, getting for it to be as hyped up as it was. We're going to finally give you answers. We're going to take a stance, in where this is and why this is important, to just causing more questions was really interesting, especially as they were talking about content, especially after talking about new content that was coming out and just getting an understanding of where that new content, such as The Undoing, where that lies on HBO Max.
Yeah. So let's get into that a little bit. So there's HBO Max, which is launching in May, and then there's other services that they offer, HBO Go and HBO Now, which we will discuss and explain what they are if we know. And then there's regular old HBO that you subscribe to via cable. Break that down for us, Kayla. What are these three services and where do they live on this system as far as they explain to you at TCA?
Right. And again, I will preface this by saying it is confusing. As you mentioned, so HBO is what viewers subscribe to via cable. It's also just the HBO brand overall. Then there's HBO Now, which to my understanding, well, it was their kind of primary streaming service
Yeah, so
to
HBO
quote.
Now is the service if you authenticate over your cable, you can watch HBO Now via streaming if you're away from your TV. So that was sort of
Right.
their first streaming product as they got into this.
Right. And then HBO Go is separate. Sorry, I actually don't think I can explain HBO
HBO
Go. HBO.
Go, I can explain it. HBO Go is for non, like if you're not a linear HBO subscriber, but you want to subscribe separately, it's HBO Go. And I also believe, and this I'm also not 100% sure about, but I believe HBO Go is the add-on subscription. Like if you go Hulu and then you get HBO Go.
Right.
So,
Yes.
and then
So
HBO Max is.
HBO Max is the newest entrant both to the HBO brand and to the, again, so-called streaming wars. And so what that includes is all things Warner Media. So you get everything from animated series that have launched on other networks. South Park, as we mentioned, is moving over to HBO Max, to DC content, Green Lantern, to Friends, which very famously is moving over to HBO Max. The thing with that, which we learned at TCA, is that what HBO Max is serving to do in comparison to the other HBO streaming platforms and services is essentially the idea is to be kind of a catch-all for everyone in the household. So the idea is that you can have HBO Max and you can watch something, your husband can watch something, and your kid could watch something. It's really just tying together all of these things that most people might not know is WarnerMedia, or is tied to HBO in general in one place. in order to be able to watch an animated series and be like, you know what, I want to watch Big Little Lies. It has HBO content on it, HBO original content, everything from what's already been out, library content, to what's coming out, all of the things that they talked about at TCA. But at the same time, they're moving all of these other series, all of these other movies over to this one platform for everyone to be able to watch on one service.
Right. So I think the thing to me that's very interesting in the way that they're doing this, but also incredibly confusing, is okay, let's say you're me and you're an HBO subscriber, which I am. So then when HBO Max comes out, I immediately have access to HBO Max. So to me, it'll probably be pretty seamless. If you are an HBO Go subscriber, and I also believe Now subscriber, but I don't get how this works, but you can still subscribe to those products and not subscribe to HBO Max. I don't know why you would want to do that. I feel like why wouldn't you just get all this content? But you can do that. So, but I do think the bundling of saying you're already an HBO subscriber, cool. You're going to get HBO Max, same price. That I think is genius because you launch with an immediate subscriber base. And so, and you show up in the world with what, 40 million subscribers or something from day one.
Right, exactly. And so that part of it is pretty turnkey. It translates really well. You pretty much just send one message to the people that are already subscribing and say, hey, now you have more content. And as you mentioned, for the same price. What is the confusing part about it, however, is that if you have nothing to do with HBO, let's say even you just subscribe to it via cable. It's the messaging around why do I choose HBO Max versus just watching it on the network? You know,
Totally.
it's the why in that case. And also what's important to know is they have no intentions of dissolving HBO Go or HBO Now or
Right.
even other streaming services like DC Universe and Boomerang. Those are still sticking around. So if you're interested in specific Boomerang content, you can still just be a subscriber to Boomerang, and they're very aware of that. They actually use that as a specific example. But the way that it's being presented is, yeah, you can watch that Boomerang content, but if you want to watch more, if you want more content for your household, then you can use HBO Max. So there's just a lot of options out there, and in my opinion, too many options to truly understand the why of why I'm subscribing to HBO Max versus I just want to watch this content, I'm just going to subscribe to this. And the same goes for even just the HBO brand overall. As I mentioned, all HBO original content is moving over to HBO Max, but their strategy is, oh, if you just want to watch HBO content, you don't have to just subscribe to HBO Max. So they are giving viewers that option in that way, but it's translating to be quite confusing. And I think that the messaging strategy should just be a little bit more refined. Because even the reporters in the room were understanding the concept and were needing clarification on a lot of things prior to asking their questions, which is, I think, really telling of where that lies.
Yeah, because if we as TV reporters don't understand it, imagine the poor consumer.
Exactly.
Tell us what Boomerang is.
Yeah, so Boomerang has a long history, but essentially what it is now is it's a service that allows you to watch throwback cartoons, essentially. So, you know, the Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes, all that stuff is on Boomerang. So all of that's also being folded into HBO Max, but it was being used as an example of if you just want to watch
Right.
that content, you can still just subscribe to that.
Does Boomerang include Cartoon Network? Do you know?
You know, I think it does like the older, like early 2000s content. I'm not sure how
Up to
late
date
it
it
goes
is.
now or how early it goes now. Yeah.
So that was HBO Max. Another thing that I thought was interesting is that, so you had some of the streaming services present, a lot of them as part of their larger parent companies' days of presentations, but they didn't bring Disney Plus, and Netflix didn't bring Netflix, which is sort of standard Netflix. But what did you think about those services not being there? Do you think, I mean, was it notable? Do you think that they missed out on an opportunity? What's your take on that?
So what was interesting was that a lot of, well, I would argue that every network, when they were taking their stances, where they lie and what their strategy is, everything was being compared to Netflix and Disney Plus.
Interesting.
And yeah, and that's also seen, I think, just in the media overall, you know, like I think Netflix is probably the primary
Service, the primary competitor.
Yeah, the primary, comparison. Okay, I'm gonna say that again.
Yeah. I
I
mean,
think
'cause
Netflix
Netflix
has
was
been.
first market, so that makes sense. And they're definitely the biggest. They have the most subscribers, so that makes sense.
Right. And I think it's more, I think it's not even just the Netflix name. I think it's also just like the symbol of like you said, just being the first to market. So everyone was drawing comparisons to them. A lot of the questions were being framed around Netflix, like, oh, Netflix, and now with Disney Plus, that was a common theme. And so I do think that it was a missed opportunity in the sense that everyone was drawing comparisons to them, but they weren't able to draw comparisons in the opposite way. You know, a lot of people have been asking or wondering what Netflix thinks about these things, how Netflix feels about the entrants, where they stand. And, you know, there's been a couple of things that have come out about it, about just how they're confident in their brand and confident in the original content that they're putting out. But I think it would have been a great opportunity to just address it in that way and kind of refine their strategy for, you know, people who might be considering other streaming services instead of Netflix, especially because they're already subscribed to Netflix. And then Disney Plus being, you know, such a big entrant, although more recently, I think that would have been good to refine its brand, especially after, you know, putting out so much news, so much content, and even after their D23 Expo in August, in which they laid out a lot of things and a lot of content and programming, just refining it, you know, now that they've launched, now that they kind of understand where they're at, and as new entrants like Peacock and HBO Max come up. So I do think it was a missed opportunity in that way. But at the same time, you know, they're probably the biggest names among everything. So I think that they just didn't have to, which is why they didn't.
Right.
Which, you know, it is what it is.
I think with Netflix, like, I mean, as a reporter, you're like, I want to hear your take and I want to ask you questions, but I always feel like with them, it's kind of a flex. Like, we don't have to come to you. We don't, you know, we're doing fine without you, so we're not going to talk to you about this. So,
Exactly.
I mean, it hasn't hurt them thus far, but with Disney Plus, I mean, I do think, so you mentioned D23. And I think that's sort of the Disney press strategy, which is basically completely control the message and the venue. So as opposed to going to like a TCA where they have to share the stage with a bunch of other people, they'd rather just have their own stage and say what they want and only talk about themselves. Truthfully, can't really blame them.
No, that's why I said it is what it is. You know, it's exactly like you said, they don't have to, so they didn't. And, you know, nothing's changed by that. But whereas, you know, the other ones that were present, you know, they took a stance because they figured out that they needed to say something for several reasons.
Right. And then the presentation I'm always interested in is FX and Jon Landgraf. This one, he talked about, well, he once again told us that there's 4 million original scripted series or something coming out this year. And then also that FX on Hulu is launching in March. So, and they're launching with exclusive content like Devs, which stars Nick Offerman, and Mrs. America, which stars Cate Blanchett. So, what did you learn about all that offering from Landgraf? And actually, well, behind the scenes, I had said to Kayla, like, I wondered how Landgraf felt about having FX go on Hulu. But then after I read your story and talked to you about it a little, I felt like I understood that it does seem like a good opportunity for them. But why don't you talk a little bit about what he said?
For those who don't know, FX on Hulu is a partnership between the network and the streaming service. It was introduced last year, but they officially introduced themselves during the Golden Globes with a spot that premiered and then talking a little bit more about it at TCA. So pretty much what FX on Hulu is it's a branded hub on Hulu. So you can literally go to a tab that says FX on Hulu, and it includes over something like over 40 library content from the FX network. It includes the new series, like a new seasons and new series, like the new season of Fargo, Dave, which is coming out soon. So when new seasons and new series are premiering on FX, oftentimes they'll be available on Hulu the next day, in addition to the library content like Sons of Anarchy and previous seasons of Atlanta and American Horror Story. And so, as you mentioned, there's exclusive content as well that's going to be on there. So the question came up of what this means in the context of linear versus network, if this is their way of entering the streaming space without really entering the streaming space. And essentially what Landgraf said is that they're not competing with each other. FX on Hulu is going to serve as an extension of the FX brand and the network because not only do they have different audiences, but in the end, it's a wider audience, and they're going to be able to reach more people with, like you said, the exclusive content like Mrs. America and Devs. So these series, they're still FX originals. They're still being branded as FX originals, but you can only stream them on Hulu. And I think the overall theme with just him talking about it was that it just goes back to taking a stance in streaming wars and kind of addressing it. And he really believes that FX on Hulu is going to make the FX brand even more stronger and valuable because of this broader audience and because of the fact that they're going to be able to create more content and for streaming specifically. So they're definitely truly considering it a partnership and not a replacement for the linear network because they're serving two different purposes.
Did he say anything about like shows like Devs or Mrs. America eventually coming to the linear network?
As of right now, the plan isn't to do that at all. They're very much treating it like a different network in a sense. But like I mentioned before, it's the opposite with shows like Fargo and Atlanta. They'll still stream, or I'm sorry, they'll still premiere exclusively on the FX network, and then they'll stream exclusively on Hulu the next day.
Okay. I mean, I think that it is interesting in light of FX was, I mean, FX has also done a great job of building itself into a premier brand without, I mean, it's a basic cable network. So as opposed to HBO, which is branded as a premier cable network and you pay for that, FX is not. It's an advertising supported basic cable network, but it's still got the sheen of being a premier place to watch content. But they, up to this point, they hadn't really had any kind of streaming presence. And a lot of their shows, like The Americans, for example, were only available on Amazon Prime, which was weird because it was like, why would you go to Amazon Prime to find an FX show? So, in light of Disney acquisition, it makes sense to carve out a spot for FX in the streaming world. And I think Hulu make, you know, in light of the fact that Disney owns Hulu now essentially 100%. That's a good place to do it, as opposed to trying to be like, let's create another streaming place. You know, let's create a whole nother streaming brand. Instead, why don't you put it inside of a larger brand and not create, you know, another one of 50 streaming services that people are having to subscribe to?
Exactly. And they definitely consider it like a cycle that they're building as well. A specific example that he used was their recent edition of A Christmas Carol. And so that one, he revealed that, you know, I mean, streaming actually has a younger audience, but for that specific special, it had a much younger audience on when they had put it on Hulu as opposed to it premiering on the linear
Interesting.
network. That's kind of the concept, is to be able to not only reach that younger audience, but as you mentioned, FX has a really strong brand. And so when you watch an FX show, you're fairly likely to kind of go down the tunnel and watch more FX shows for the most part. And so they think that in order to reach wider audiences, younger audiences, they're going to watch this content on Hulu and essentially go down the rabbit hole of FX on Hulu, watch more FX shows, and strengthen the brand in that way. And so that's the way that they're going to really strengthen the brand as they move forward, as streaming becomes more of a thing. And I personally think it's great. I think it's an amazing idea to do a branded hub, because, like I said, if you watch Atlanta, you're going to go to that hub, you're going to see other shows that are similar to it, and it's just going to spiral from there.
I will say, though, that the FX shows essentially bear no similarity to each other. I mean, they're all, other than that, I think they're all very good, like they're all very premium, but I don't think, you know, like Atlanta bears no resemblance to Fargo, bears no resemblance to, you know, American Horror Story. They all feel very different. But I mean, I guess you could argue that for HBO too. They, you know, the what feels the same is that premium sheen.
Exactly. And just the brand overall. I feel like you trust that it's going to be good content for the most part, and so you see all of this content in one place, and you're more likely, I think, to, as I mentioned, kind of just jump into it.
I mean, it's, if you think about like Netflix doesn't have sub brands like that. Whereas it does make sense for Hulu to then say, here's the FX hub, and perhaps they'll come up with other hubs. And really, that's what Disney Plus has done too, right? With their different pillars. There's Pixar, there's Disney, there's Nat Geo, there's Star Wars, there's Marvel. So, you know, they've done a really good job of saying, let's bring these different, very powerful brands under one umbrella and capitalize on that. So, you know, in light of, I'm just sort of thinking about this as we talk, but it makes sense to do something similar at Hulu. Okay, so my next question is, what shows that you saw were you excited about seeing? And let me just say that all the ones I was excited about, we've already mentioned. So they are, I was excited about Devs and Mrs. America on FX, and I think that Undoing on HBO looks good. So what did you see that you were excited to see?
Yeah, so The Undoing was definitely one that stood out to me. So I was able to watch the screener for that one,
Oh, you
and
are. Cool.
I was, yeah, only 3 episodes, but and apparently there's so much more happening after that, Nicole very so aptly said during her panel. But that one looked
Your
really
friend,
good.
Nicole.
My friend Nicole, yeah. Yeah, so that one looks really interesting. I definitely think that there's a lot in store, and as I mentioned earlier, that one's coming from Big Little Lies creator David E. Kelley. So that definitely seems promising for a lot of different reasons. Also, what stood out to me on Hulu is Little Fires Everywhere. Yeah, so I did watch the screeners for those as well, but that one stars Reese Witherspoon, Kerry Washington, and that one has a lot of really great themes that are kind of intertwined with each other, and just it is based off of a novel of the same name, so there's a lot of just interweavings, a lot of different themes going through, and that one seems really interesting as well.
Yep, I'm excited about that one too. And that is on Hulu?
Hulu, yes. And then actually, I actually didn't know much about Mrs. America going into the FX presentation. So that one, I think, sparked the most interest in me without having watched anything, without knowing anything, just really getting insight, as I mentioned, from like the whole cast. The whole cast was there.
Oh, really?
Very, very crazy stuff. Yes, everyone from Sarah Paulson to, as you mentioned, Cate Blanchett. Everyone was there and gave really great insight on the characters that they're portraying, how they dived into that, and kind of what they hope that the message is going to be for not only like just people in America, but especially young women in America. And giving new perspective in that way. So that one was the biggest pleasant surprise to me that I'm looking forward to learning more about.
Just a so in that one, Cate Blanchett plays Phyllis Schlafly, I think is how you pronounce it, who I probably some people know, other people don't, but she was a big conservative, sort of anti-feminist icon in the 70s, and then also portrayed in the show, I believe, writer Gloria Steinem and somebody else that I can't remember now. But yeah, I mean, to me, I'm like, oh, it's FX and it's Cate Blanchett, I'm in. And that's sort of how I feel
Yeah.
about Devs too, which is Nick Offerman, which looks really interesting.
Right. That one is definitely complex, it seems. That one was a little bit hard to understand for me, just because I don't know. There's a lot going on. But that one
You're not
definitely
a
seems cool, and
sci-fi
that
person.
I am, but it was just very abstract. And I think just knowing that that's kind of like the flagship series, I would argue, for FX on Hulu in general. So just understanding why that is, and as you mentioned, Nick Offerman is leading that one, so that one will be good as well, I think.
Nick Offerman of Parks and Rec fame for all my
Yes.
Parks and Rec heads out there. All right, we're gonna leave TCA. Goodbye, TCA, and we're gonna talk a little bit about a panel that happened Tuesday night that Promex did. It was our first ever State of Our Marketplace panel. Kayla Marie was in attendance. So why don't you run through, Kayla, who was on the panel and sort of what the point of this panel was?
Right. So as you mentioned, this is the very first time Promex held this event. And so basically the idea, there's been so much happening within the last couple of years, especially the last year. And so, with all the mergers and consolidations and the rise of digital, there's just been a lot of questions about what marketing teams look like, what marketing in general looks like, and kind of how agencies and partners can fit into that. And so the event just really sparked conversation between marketing execs and agencies to address kind of what those needs are, both going into 2020 and also just like looking into the future. And so it was a panel of 5 people hosted by Leigh Hunt. So there was Mike Benson from CBS, Scott Edwards from Fox Entertainment, Stephen Melnick from Disney TV Studios, Tricia Melton from Freeform, and John Rood from Disney Channels Worldwide. They each provided definitely a really good variety of speakers, because they each provided not only what their own individual needs are, but kind of what the landscape looks like with the aforementioned like mergers, consolidations, all that stuff, and really gave direct advice to the agencies and the people in attendance on how they fit into that and how they can best service their needs and be unique about it, which was really good.
So, what would you say? I mean, you wrote a piece about this, but what would you say were some of the key takeaways that these executives told agencies they're looking for?
I think the conversation in general has shaped itself to be in-house marketing teams versus out-of-house marketing teams. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of turned into a debate. I think what was really good about it was that they kind of addressed it in the way of saying, it's not a debate, it's not an either or, it's if I have an in-house marketing team, I'm still going to need out-of-house agencies for certain needs.
Right.
And I think that was really good that was just addressed very directly. And the consensus was pretty across the board, I would say, between the five marketing executives. Really, they just gave perspective in saying that there are definitely some things that their in-house teams can't tackle. And the biggest one of those is having a fresh perspective. So when you work on something for so long, when you kind of get stuck into the same machine, when you get on the same marketing campaign calendar, there's only so much that you can see in front of you after a certain amount of time. Out-of-house agencies can provide that. They can provide that fresh perspective. They can provide that creativity, and they can really understand the audience in a different way that maybe the in-house marketing team can't because they have that out-of-pocket perspective. Not only are marketing executives looking for that, but they're also looking for it to be presented with confidence and creativity, not just an email that's, hey, I think I can help you with this marketing campaign, or hey, I have this idea, but really standing out and showing them what makes them special and why they shouldn't turn to their in-house marketing team to do something or to a different agency to do that. So it's really about being creative, being really knowledgeable about the brand and the audience, doing research before even pitching anything to them so that you're proving to them that not only am I this agency, not only am I this editor that can do this for you, but this is why it's important, and this is why you don't have to get caught up in the same machine that may or may not be working for you in reaching these target audiences.
Yeah, I think that one thing that's interesting is they were, I was not there, everyone. I just read Kayla's story. But I think that one thing that was interesting that came up was that they're saying, we're really looking for you to provide some strategic insight into what we're doing, who our audience is, and how we're approaching them. So as opposed to, here, come in and cut 45 trailers for us, they're saying, come in and give us a reason. I mean, you can show us how you can help us. And I feel like I've had a lot of conversations with agency owners, people recently who have felt like they didn't know how to get into this area. And my take on it has always been, there's so much content, there has to be so much work that goes along with it. But it is a matter of having the conversation with these clients and figuring out their needs, as opposed to being like, well, I've always done it this way, and they don't seem to want that anymore, so maybe I should just pack it up. I feel like it's just a matter of shifting gears and shifting perspective. So I feel like this is the first of several events like this that we're going to do. Like, this conversation to me seems really core to our community. And I feel like it's answerable.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too that different executives will provide different answers. Mm-hmm. Although the consensus was pretty similar, I would say, with this panel, there were specific things that certain people needed. So for example, Trisha at Freeform very much stress the importance of social, because social is a very important part of Freeform's marketing. There are different nuances in that way that not everyone's going to be the same. So it's about more than just knowing the audience. It's about knowing the brand and the company really well as well, even if you're given it from an outside perspective.
And then the other thing that your piece talked about was, if you're an agency, be really clear about what your unique selling proposition is, as opposed to, here I am, I can solve all your needs. It's know your superpower, know the one or two things you really bring to the table, and lean into that.
Right. And that was really cool. That superpower concept came from Mike Benson at CBS. And he really was just, theme across the board was to don't brand yourself as a full service agency, because everyone can do everything. And Trisha actually very specifically said that you can be good at everything, but you should be great at something.
Yeah.
And essentially that's what they want to see, because they know that you're going to provide the expertise that either they don't have or that their in-house marketing team doesn't have. And essentially that's why they'll be going out to agencies when they are.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So there's more to come on that front. We are putting together the next event. It's there's little information about it. So Kayla, when is it and where is it, sort of? We don't have a place booked yet, but.
Right. So part two of State of Our Marketplace is happening in New York, actually. So the first one was here in LA. But this one's in New York at a to-be-determined venue. However, it will be on March 31st. The event is geared more specifically toward agencies. However, it's free for all members, all Promax members. And then you can RSVP online on Promax.
Okay. So watch this space and we will give you more information about that. Kayla Marie, excellent first podcast. Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. And I will talk to you very soon.
Thank you. Thank you for
Okay.
having me.
You're welcome. Bye, Kayla.
Bye.
Just one quick correction before we go. In my explanation of HBO Now and HBO Go, I switched the two services. So, HBO Go is an add-on service that subscribers to HBO can use to access HBO from mobile devices. HBO Now is HBO's standalone subscription video on demand service. I think that just further elucidates why the offering of HBO Go, HBO Now, and HBO Max is potentially going to be confusing for consumers, but we will see what happens once WarnerMedia launches HBO Max. Paige Albiniak is Editorial Director of Promax. Andres Trujillo, Promax's Social Media and Community Manager, produced this podcast. Video Helper provides the music. Digital Content Producer Kayla Marie Hardaway contributes to Daily Brief. Promax has rebranded to just Promax, so you can find us on Promax Global on Facebook and Promax_Global on Twitter and Instagram. You can also always reach out to us at dailybrief@promax.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.